Welcome to the Equip Podcast, a weekly podcast for K-12 Christian educators and parents. Our objective is to give voice to equip our school community about thinking and teaching in light of a Christian worldview. We are covering a host of issues, purpose to scratch where our parents are itching, and seeking to answer some of their most pressing questions. I am so incredibly excited today because we have some experts in the field of parenting and counseling, David Thomas and Sissy Goff with Daystar Counseling in Nashville. And so welcome, David and Sissy.
Thank you. We're so glad to be here.
Thank you for having us.
All right. Very excited. We were just kind of unpacking where we're from earlier. Sissy, you're a Razorback.
I am a Razorback through and through.
I'm a Tennessee Vol. Uh-oh. So I have a fun
so
story.
So is he. So I'm in trouble
All right.
in this room.
Yes, sir. High five across the room.
We got outnumbered.
So we can tag team here. So this is a fascinating story. So you're from Little Rock. I was in Conway, Arkansas for 9 months of my life. This is in the fall of 98, and this was when Clint Sterner dropped the ball, and we went on and won. It was a crazy game.
Yes.
Went on to win the national championship.
Yes.
It was pretty incredible. Well, it was funny because Arkansas fans said we didn't lose that game. They just kept telling me. I'm like, we're national champions now. Fast forward a year, I went to Fayetteville, my first time ever, to the Tennessee
Beautiful
game at
city.
Arkansas. We ranked like number three. I don't even think Arkansas is ranked. We get beat. And I'm walking out of there, and people were coming up to me and like, you know, what's up? You know, it was a fascinating thing. And just hearing the calling of the Hogs. Can you call the Hogs? Is that?
Really?
I don't want you to do it on the
Yeah.
I don't want to scare
I can
listeners.
Call the Hogs for sure. You spent a lot of years of my life calling those Hogs.
You seem like you do it well. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it was fascinating. So I know there's a pretty good rivalry. It's not.
Yes.
We've been on the not so good end lately of this rivalry, but. Well, hopefully, we'll
working
get
on it. We're trying to come back too. I will say though, while we're talking, I don't know if either of you all have seen the movie Greater. Have you seen that
no.
movie? Speaking of the Razorbacks, there is a great movie. We have at Daystar, we do a lot of different things, but one of our things we do is for the kids who are in counseling. We have a camp, and we the first night of every camp watch a movie on the back of a barn. And with our 7th and 8th grade camp, we watched this movie about Brandon Burlsworth, who was a walk-on in Fayetteville and then went on to be an NFL player. And now there are all these trophies named after him. He was supposedly the best walk-on of all times. And he, when he was drafted, I think a week later, he was killed in a car accident, which is where the movie starts, so it's not a spoiler alert. But he was a believer. And the movie is just, the gospel is just throughout the movie. And it's
wow.
a beautiful thing to watch with kids to talk mm-hmm. about. I mean, we had so many great teaching moments based off that movie. So, you know, and he's a Razorback, so it's fun to watch. But
and you're creating some little Razorback fans
yes,
in the state
absolutely.
Of Tennessee.
In Tennessee. We actually made them all call the Hogs before we watched the movie. It was very fun.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yes. Well, we're so glad y'all are here. You all are here on campus really to kind of equip our parents. And you did a session this morning with our middle school and upper school parents called Are My Kids on Track? This afternoon, you'll be with our lower school parents. We're at our lower school campus talking about intentional parenting. I guess, you know, one of the things about our school is we have lots of kids, lots of families, and we are a school that seeks to glorify God in all things, and we want to be serious about the gospel and the truth, the goodness, and the beauty of the gospel. But, man, we are imperfect. Mm. I am an imperfect dad and head of school and leading that and working with families, but we try to do it in community. Talk a little bit about your Daystar, and then I want to kind of deep dive into this thing on Are My Kids on Track to kind of unpack that for our parents a little bit. So I'd love to hear a little bit overview of Daystar and about especially about the dogs.
Yes.
We can move on from the calling of the Hogs.
That's hard to do for me. Well, Daystar started before either of us were there in 1985 by our good friend and boss, Melissa Trevathan, founded it. And then I came on board in 93 and David did 97. And we have grown exponentially over the years. But we are now housed in one boy called it a little yellow house that helps people. But we do have about 1,400 families that are currently in counseling at Daystar. But we try to do counseling differently because for kids, for us as adults, it can be scary to go to counseling. And so we want to make it as warm and inviting and disarming as possible. And so our offices look like living rooms. We have spiced tea brewing in the lobby. We have three dogs on staff. David's dog has the most initials behind his name. He's Owen. He's a therapy dog.
He has more letters than I do, actually. He's more qualified to do the work.
Yes. And then Melissa has a dog named Blueberry Pancake, who is a sheepdog, Old English sheepdog. And
is
then
one
I
of those
have
letters Rocky Top behind your...
Indeed.
And then I have a little Havanese named Lucy, who is the boss of all the dogs. So often, if you came into Daystar, you would see my Havanese chasing the Old English Sheepdog and the Yellow Lab around the building, just, you know, as a side thing going on at Daystar in the midst of the counseling. But it's fun because kids engage so much. I will go places sometimes and meet a kid who comes to Daystar that I've never met, and they'll say, "Oh, are you Lucy's mom?" And they know Lucy more than they know me. So, so many kids, they're favorite counselors on staff. But we love getting to be a part of that and that ministry, and just getting to, we talk so often about how it's not so much that we're experts. We just get to come alongside kids and families and have for a lot of years. And things have changed so much in the years that we've been counseling in the landscape of kids. And so I think we love doing things like this and helping to equip parents, because we do need to be staying current with where they are and what they're being exposed to and how we can best not only support them but shepherd them in the midst of that.
Hmm. Well said. Well, let me share a verse that just, I think, is a really great verse, as I've worked a lot with adolescents and parents and just in my own life. You know, in Luke 2:52, you know, it's a fascinating passage, because earlier in the chapter, Jesus doesn't tell his parents where he's going to go, and they're looking for him like crazy. And he's in the temple, and middle schoolers can sometimes drive us crazy, but that's part of their maturation. That's part of their growth development. Yes. And so, and he's
even
with
individuating.
Individuating.
That's part of what,
and he was without sin. Like, that was not a sin for him. But in Luke 2:52, it says, Jesus increased in wisdom, in stature, and in favor with God and man. And so there's these domains there, the intellectual, the physical, the spiritual, the emotional. And so and even for me as a dad, I've got my kids range from teenage years to my youngest is 7. And so we're in this kind of journey with all these parents. What does that look like for our kids to be on track? I know that the story, the book is about milestones, social, emotional, and spiritual, which bring out those domains a little bit. Kind of share, you know, on a high level about some of those.
Well, that was so much why this book felt maybe more important than anything we had written to date, because we talked with the parents this morning that if we think about those domains, we have these different contexts where our kids exist, where we can really measure and mark those different milestones with a lot of accuracy. We kind of know the questions to ask. We even invited parents to think back to when you were in the hospital with your firstborn, or when you went to the pediatrician's office if you adopted with your first child, and that those visits always begin with questions. In the hospital, it would have been, how are they sleeping? How are they eating? Are they nursing okay? And from there, it just continues. Are they making eye contact? Are they crawling? Are they pulling up? Are they walking? And we're tracking so closely in that context with their physical development, and we know that if they're not, we want to layer some extra support underneath that to help them move forward. Once they come into great settings like this one, we can track so closely with their cognitive development, and we can identify in this day and age if a child's reading on a fourth grade level, third month, second week. Like, we have resources and tools that can measure that accurately, but there's really not a context where we are tracking as closely with their emotional and social development in the same ways. And so it felt important to us to really talk about and define those milestones first, and then within each chapter what we do is we talk about what are the stumbling blocks to getting there and what are the building blocks to helping kids progress toward these. And we even branch off and talk about stumbling blocks unique to boys, stumbling blocks unique to girls, and then building blocks in the same way. And one of the most important goals for us was that it not feel like a lot of extra work. Like, we wanted so much to talk with parents, talk with educators about these are things that you can be doing, likely already are doing in some ways with the kids you love, but here are just some different ways to approach it. For example, we talk about most every parent is reading books at night with really young children. Every middle school and high schooler is reading books in school. So how could we, within those books we're reading with our kids, or even read along the books our adolescent kids are reading, and then talk about the emotional content within that, like use it as a teaching tool. How could we talked about this morning that every kid loves movies, from toddlers all the way through adolescents. And so how could we watch movies with kids and then ask great questions afterwards that, again, flex the emotional and social muscles in some ways that are helpful?
Hmm. You know, it's funny you mentioned movies. I was this was last year. I had this unique opportunity. My son was in middle school, and none of my other kids were in lower school. So I had this 20-25 minute commute every single day with my kid. And I realized this is 1 year that I have this mm-hmm. with my son. I have one boy and three girls. And we were just struggling with some responsibility things. And I thought, I'm going to tell him the story of Spider-Man. You know, the story of Spider-Man is with great power comes great responsibility.
Yes.
So I said, you know, and I just started telling him the story. And we just did it every morning. I would try to leave it a little bit hanging to where he would look forward to it. And literally he would run out of the, all right, let's start the story. Like that was, for a middle schooler, it was kind of a captivating thing to watch that. But I was like, man, trying to be creative. And so this summer we got to where we started watching the series, the Spider-Man series. And it's been fun to unpack that, to having that thread of using cinema, but also using the redemptive elements that can come out of story and movie
yes.
and books to not only teach, but to go deeper with your kids.
Yes.
So
well, and I would say not only your creativity, but the wisdom of you knowing, as a father of a boy, like, what boy is not captivated by the story of Spider-Man? Like, it's captivating.
It captivates me.
Me so, too. Yeah. And I will even jump off from there with boys, talk about the social milestones. One of the milestones that we talk about is awareness, and that's a particular deficit for a lot of boys, awareness of self, awareness of others. And so I even talk in the book about talking with boys about having a Spidey sense. Like, you know how Spider-Man has that ability to see things, know things. He can sense what's going on in a space before other people do. Like, what would it look like to develop more of a Spidey sense? And then coaching boys in real practical ways of developing literally a Spidey sense where you're more aware of things than you were before.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Man, Spidey sense.
I love
that's
that.
Great. I love
all
it.
All boys need a little more Spidey sense.
I agree.
And
me
girls
too.
Have too much Spidey sense. They need to turn it down.
Yeah, talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
in terms of awareness.
Yeah. So what? They're a little bit more hyper on the Spidey sense.
Yes.
So what does it look like? I guess that leads to drama and
yes. Well,
thinking things that aren't true reality. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And it's different, I think, with different ages. But girls are just so intuitive by nature, and which can be a really beautiful thing when they're younger. I mean, there are so many stories. I'm sure it happens here all the time. But about girls who will be playing soccer or something, and a friend will fall down behind them, and they could no more care about the goal. You know, they just run back and help their friend who fell. And that's just such a part of who they are. But they're just... We talk a lot about how girls define themselves by relationship often and how that looks different. It starts with parents and shifts, obviously, to peers. And when in early adolescence it shifts to peers, a girl said to me one time, I have such a hard time thinking for myself because I'm so aware of what other people are thinking about me. Hmm. And it's that thing where I think they can lose their sense of identity in the midst of being so tuned in and so hyper aware of everyone about them. And so how do we keep bringing them back to a groundedness in that? Mm. So I really will talk to girls about how do you turn the volume down and start to be grounded in your own sense of not just who you are, but who do you want to be in that moment and who's God called you to be ultimately in that moment.
Yeah. Well, in hearing you speak this morning, you know, one of the things was, and you kind of alluded to that, you turn the dial a little bit, tweaking, you're not adding to, you're just kind of tweaking, turning the dial on your rather rhythm of life on how to even some of the language you'll use. So what does that look like for the milestone of emotional development when you think about being kids being on track? What are some things that parents can do to ask appropriate questions to reveal the heart?
Mm. I was thinking as you were asking that, we're staying with the Marvel characters real well in this conversation. Like,
I got to work on some Wonder Woman.
Which is a great movie.
It
I saw that this summer.
It's a great movie.
Indeed. Well, and I'm going to pull the Incredible Hulk in our conversation now because
I was going to ask, are you going Hulk on me?
I'm going Hulk on you. I'm going Hulk on you. I talk with so many boys there about figuring out more about what you feel and what to do with it. And we talk about how the Hulk is all about Bruce Banner's trying to figure out how can I keep this monster from emerging? Because when he comes out, I get destructive. And that's what so many boys do. I talked this morning about how for so many boys, there's a physicality to their emotions. And so when a feeling registers deeply, you know, anger, a lot of times, you know, they clench their fist and grit their teeth. Some boys even moan or grunt. And adolescent boys are prone to punching holes in drywall, those kinds of things, the Hulk comes out. And so what does it look like practically to help the boys we love begin to figure out more about what they feel, and then the second step being what to do with it? And this morning we talked about it, and we believe so strongly in the importance of, I'd love for every family to have a feelings chart hanging somewhere in their house that they could reference just in the dailiness of life, that when we sit down at dinner and have that conversation that we do as families of how was your day, or maybe you talk about high points and low points, that we're folding more emotional vocabulary into that rather than just saying it was a rotten day. Mm-hmm. Parents saying, you know, I felt embarrassed today. I had to give a presentation to the board of directors and I didn't feel prepared. Or mom saying, I felt sad. I hurt a friend with something I said and I didn't intend to. And that kind of modeling being so important. We talk about how kids learn more from observation than information. And so they're absorbing so much when they see us and experience us using that kind of vocabulary, and then coaching them toward doing more of that, figuring out what it is that you really feel and then figuring out what to do with it. In fact, talk about some of what you discussed with perspective and helping kids be resourceful.
Well, before that, I was going to say, I don't know if I told you the story, but I had taught on that recently at a parenting class when we were together about girls specifically and talking about your emotions and how girls are so hard on themselves. And so even in that perspective, emotionally, for parents to say when they fail in front of their kids. And this mom told me that she came to eat lunch with her daughter at school, and her daughter said this, introduced her to a friend and said, "This is my mom. She hurts people's feelings all the time."
Oh, wow. Oh, no.
So you never know where they'll go with it. But yes, so our emotional milestones are emotional vocabulary that David talked about, perspective, empathy, and resourcefulness, because it's that sense of how do we teach them to talk about their feelings and then talk about them in perspective and then keep moving and not get stuck in it, which feels like a tricky piece, I think, more today than ever. But the perspective piece of it, I think, probably lends itself toward talking about girls so much, too, because I've started talking about a scale a lot in my office in counseling, a 1 to 10 scale emotionally, and that we all know life really happens 2 to 7, but they hit 10. So many girls, whether it's anxiety, sadness, anger, whatever it is, they're blowing up against 10 all the time. And so, and because I work with girls, I've started calling it a dramamometer because it feels appropriate. But what I've talked to girls about is, tell me a 10 on your scale. What's the saddest thing that you can imagine happening, or the scariest thing, or the things that would make you the most angry? And depending on where they are developmentally, it'll look different. And then talking to them about, now when you have a bad day, let's go back to that number. And so even to say to parents, you can do that at home. And then when your child gets in the car and says, this is the worst day of my whole life, you can go back to that scale and listen with empathy first. Sounds like a really hard day. That makes me so sad for you. What number do you think it was on your scale? Where they automatically are saying, oh, it was a bad day, but it wasn't the worst day. Mm-hmm. Because so much of what's going on with kids culturally right now is they're living in this worst. I mean, we were talking about how the language that kids use has changed so much, and that I don't hear kids say, I was really worried. I hear kids say, I have anxiety, or I had a panic attack. That they almost feel like they have to use that kind of language now to get our attention. Mm-hmm. And so how do we keep teaching them to scale it back to what really is real and true, so that when they are having panic attacks or they are depressed, we know that that's what they mean. Mm-hmm. And we know how to act on it.
Or rather than saying, I had conflict with a friend or someone hurt my feelings today, saying, I was bullied. We just changed the language so much. Yeah. And in doing so, I think kids really can't establish perspective easily because it's such strong language.
So what does it look like for a parent that gets in the car with their kid, and maybe this is my car. I mean, I'll use my car example. You know, asking my kids, hey, how was your day? And they say, fine. So what does it look like to get from that point to a much more, what are some of the good teaser questions to kind of really show the heart and get to some deeper things, and almost to, because I think that's the norm for a lot of parents.
Yes.
That's the reality. And so what does that look like for that to move towards more of a talking about your feelings and your emotions? And what are some really good questions parents can ask along the way? Because it's almost like you can't go from 0 to 60. There's a progress, and you have to almost calibrate it up, as opposed to, what's the A to Z kind of questions that you would say? These are some really good questions to ask your kids. You know, if you're getting these short, curt answers, especially for boys, on that end, but then also for on the girl, you know, how do you, mm-hmm. how, what are some ways that you can dial it back the, mm-hmm. for more of the female side?
I would say with boys, you know, I think a high percentage of boys, their emotional vocabulary, this involves fine, bored, and annoyed. That's as far as it goes. That's as expansive. And so I think I laugh in the book and say, you know, the acronym FINE is feelings in need of expression. So I think it's great to laugh with a boy and say that. So every time I hear you say FINE, I'm going to say dig a little deeper, because that means there's something else underneath, that we can do that in a way that's playful, mm-hmm. I think, with boys and pitching the ball back to them. That's some of where I think that feelings chart is really useful, because they mm-hmm. can't get there on their own so easily. And Sissy talked today about how anger is a secondary or a derivative emotion. So there's always something underneath. And I think it's great to ask kids that, like, in addition to anger, what else do you think was there? Right. Some leading open-ended questions that I think make it a little bit easier. I also think it's fine with the kids we love to wait them out, the boys we love especially. Like, you know what? I really do want you to dig a little deeper. Mm-hmm. Like, sit with that and then get back to me, so that we're following up and requiring them to flex that emotional muscle in a way that's needed. What would you say with girls?
Well, one thing I would add generally about adolescence before we talk about girls is Melissa and David and I teach a class on a book called The Backdoor to Your Teen's Heart, and that was really largely off what Melissa has taught for a million years. And one of the sentences I love that she says is, to the degree that kids can predict you, they'll dismiss you. Hmm. Which is, I think, what's happening in cars all over the country, right. world. You know, how was your day? Fine. What'd you do at school? Nothing. And you get nowhere. And with girls in particular, I think part of that is during the school day, they are expending so much energy, not just academically, but socially. Mm. And so by the time they get in the car, it's a little bit like if you're introverted at all and you go to a huge party, and at the end of the party, you just don't want to talk to anybody. And I think girls feel that way and then get in the car, and often a parent will start asking them questions and they won't have answers. And then the parent panics and says, what's wrong? Well, nothing. Why won't you talk to me? And then, I mean, I have girls who will say their moms will chase them to their doors, like, mm-hmm. please talk to me, please talk to me. And they just need a little time and yeah. a little space. And so I think that's something we need to understand, because adolescents, they do have so much more of a need mm-hmm. for privacy and a need to process emotionally what's going on apart from us. And so we want to understand that. And then I think probably with both genders, too, to come up with questions, like you said, that are different than how was your day. And I think about even counseling adolescents that don't want to be in counseling. And I have got to always, I mean, sometimes I'll ask yes, no questions and think, why did I ask a yes, no question? I'm always going to get a door closer. And so to either say, tell me about your day, but that's kind of predictable and we want to be unpredictable. And so to have questions that are follow up, you know, they were struggling with a friend or they were worried about a specific test, to go back to those things and then ask a little bit. And if they don't answer, turn on the music and just be quiet for a little bit. And often I think kids are so funny, because I feel like if they don't ask, then they'll say, we're not interested. But if we ask too much, then they feel like it's an interrogation.
Pursue with patience.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, a little bit, and then let it go. And to watch for windows, I think with teenagers particularly, mm-hmm. things like bedtime, when they've been with friends, they'll come in often and want to talk. And so, and doing anything, David, I love, talks about with boys talking around a task. And I think even driving in a car, adolescents just hit this point where they don't like intimacy with parents. Mm-hmm. They just feel so awkward. They feel awkward anyway inside of themselves. And so things like being in the car where you're both looking straight ahead is so helpful. You know, so thinking about the windows where you have a little more access to their hearts is really important too.
I also talk about with teenage boys, if talking around a task, like going outside and retrieving the ball while he's shooting hoops, or walking the dog together, or something along those lines, building something, isn't enough of an avenue to get access to what's going on with him, then there is a lot of wisdom to that age-old saying of the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. And so feed him. And it's amazing to me the things boys will say over food. Queso in particular, I think, is a magic ingredient with teenage boys. And we have a Mexican restaurant close to our office. There you go.
Yes,
and
no
so
kidding.
If I can't get a boy to talk, like, that's like my last trick to pull out of my bag, is get queso in the room. And
my
it's
mouth's
amazing.
Watering as you speak.
See? Me too. Just talking about it.
So those are all, man, we could spend hours. What are some things that we do to create a culture where we can talk about feelings? Because I think, so I just asked a question, I'm going to kind of flip it on its head and go, what are some things that to create that culture? Because sometimes I think we do get frustrated and parents throw in the towel and they don't pursue with patience. What does that look like from a parental perspective on just creating a culture that's fertile to talk about feelings? Because I know I, as a dad, can do things to turn the spigot off in my own kid's life. And I'm sure there's parents out there that do the same thing and just shut. We can say things that shut them down pretty quickly. So kind of the do's and don'ts of and maybe the what does that culture look like, and how do we try to create that in our homes, cars, and the rhythms of life?
I think one thought that comes to mind is looking for the everyday, like that we don't have to always be coming up with a really creative plan, but working with what's in front of us. My sons right now, I have twin boys, and they have a good friend whose family's going through a divorce, and I'm aware it's happening, and they're aware it's happening. And so just saying, you know, we'll say this boy's name is Jack, just saying, how do you feel like he's doing? What do you notice with him right now? Because that's right there in front of him. They play sports with him, they're in class with him, and working with something like that, or if an event is happening in our community or in our world, like what's happening right now in some scary ways, using that kind of real life right in front of you content. And I think being willing to wait, this kind of back to the wait on them to give their opinion. Sometimes I think we race ahead as parents and fill in with our opinion or our perspective. Driving home from church, we're going to say what we think about the sermon first, as opposed to just going slow and letting them give opinions. And then not feeling a need to correct those opinions, because with adolescents in particular, they're going to have some crazy opinions about things at times. And it can be about nothing more than that identity journey we talked about earlier that is going on, and where they're figuring life out on their own. What else are you thinking?
The two things that jump out to me. One is, I think the biggest complaint from girls in my office in terms of talking to their parents in general, but I think it shuts them down emotionally, is when their parents try and fix it. And they'll say, I don't talk to my mom because anything I tell her about, she tries to fix immediately. And so I think listening with patience, pursuing with patience, like you said, in that. And when we're fixing it, trying to tell them what to do to fix it, it basically is saying to them, I've got the answers and you don't anyway. And so to listen, we'll talk later today, but we talk so much about empathy and questions. And so sitting and listening and then trying to help them get to a place where they're figuring it out for themselves. What do you think? What are you feeling, first of all? And what do you think would help this situation? Instead of jumping in, and obviously it's situations where you're going to feel sad or concerned or panicky even, but ultimately they do need to figure that out. And often with our help, and more help depending on where they are in terms of age. But I think that tendency to fix it can be so strong and can shut them down. And then the other, and David's going to talk about this in our intentional parenting talk later, but the other would be that often parents will feel more about a situation than the child necessarily does. Like, I have a girl right now who's going through a lot of struggles with friends at school, and she said a similar thing to me. I can't talk to my mom about it because she gets so angry at those people. And then if I want to be friends with them again later, she's not even going to want me to because she's so upset at them. And so somehow to be able to listen and then go process emotion somewhere else, I think is so helpful for them, because if we get bigger than they do, I think that's where they turn off the spigot too.
That's well said. Well, and I, from a school administration standpoint, too, sometimes they bypass, parents sometimes will bypass and go straight to school to try to fix issues where that can become an unhealthy pattern, too. And so learning how to apply Matthew 18, which for us looks like, you know, they in a situation with a student to student or whatever, you know, listening, pursue with patience, listen to their heart, don't necessarily try to fix it, but even equipping the kid to try to work it out. If it's still not resolved, then maybe parent to parent, still not resolved, then bring the school into it. Or, you know, I think that's just a really biblical model.
Yes.
And also, I think so much goes back to identity in Christ. And even for our own selves as parents, you know, understanding that we are not perfect. We're on a journey. The Bible says that we see dimly. So any situation, we're not going to be able to see it perfectly or clearly. But there's hope in that. And we need each other, and that's what I love, having y'all here and helping equip us on some things, but you know, rooting ourselves and understanding our identity in Christ as parents, but also what does that mean for kids and their identity in Christ as they deal with the complexities that they're navigating daily. I'm so thankful y'all are here. I would encourage you to buy the books. I'm gonna buy several books from y'all and put them in our bookstore. I want to do that. And so I'm so thankful for you all and the ministry you have. So David and Sissy, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
KOKO, keep on keeping on. Soli Duo Gloria.